Okay, well, for those of you who are tuning in to listen to this message, you may notice that it sounds a little different, and that's because normally we record our sermons while we're preaching them Sunday morning, but there was a little glitch this past Sunday, and so I'm actually preaching this sermon in my office to my wall and bookshelves right now, which means that when you hear jokes, you're going to need to supply the laughter yourself. Last week we talked about, we got into Ruth chapter 1, and we introduced the story talking about the setting, the context of how this occurred during the time of the judges. The story of Ruth occurs during the time of the judges, and I paraphrased the time of the judges calling it a time when stupid people were doing stupid things over and over and over again, and the people of God were in this sort of downward spiral. The result of that downward spiral was that there was a famine, and you can go back and listen to that message and check out a little bit more about why there might have been a famine as a result of this downward spiral. But the result is that there's a famine in the land, there's a famine in Bethlehem. And we introduced the characters of this story last week. We talked about how Elimelech and his wife Naomi move out of Bethlehem and into the country of Moab. This was a country that was relatively hostile to the people of God, but they were trying to make a better lives for themselves. It didn't end up working out. And Elimelech dies very early on when they get into Moab. And so Naomi, his wife, is left as a widow, and she's there with their two sons. The sons, after the father dies, take Moabite wives. This is probably not a good thing. Go back and listen to that message and hear a little bit more about it. But not too soon after they take Moabite wives, the sons themselves die. And before we know it, our main character, Naomi, is left with her two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah. They are destitute, they are vulnerable, they are hungry, and Naomi decides, I'm moving back to Bethlehem. While they start making the trek from Moab back to Bethlehem, Naomi decides this is not in the best interest of my daughters-in-law. My Moabite daughters-in-law are going to have a much better time of it if they remain in their homeland, where they have more security, more options available to them for to sort of rebuild their future. So she tries to convince them to leave her. And Orpah does. Orpah decides she's going to go back to Moab. She isn't going to travel with Naomi. And, you know, maybe she made the right call, maybe she didn't. We're not really told either way. But Ruth decides, nope, I am in this for better or for worse with Naomi. Ruth has just lost her husband. She's just lost her brother-in-law as well. But she chooses to stick with Naomi. And you got to understand the risk that she took in doing this. She leaves behind her country, her people, her religion, her family, and gives Naomi, this person with no prospects whatsoever, she gives her a for better or worse promise. I am sticking with you till death do us part. Naomi doesn't really seem to appreciate that, and we covered it last week. She shows up in Bethlehem and talks about how she is empty and afflicted by God. She's empty, in spite of the fact that while she's saying that, Ruth is right next to her. Yes, absolutely, Naomi has lost a lot, and we should not minimize that whatsoever. But she has not lost absolutely everything. But even what she has, she doesn't really seem to notice at that time because she's grieving. She is overcome. Last week, we tried to find ways to enter into this story through the characters. You do not need to be a woman, and you do not need to be grieving the loss of a husband or a child in order to enter into this story. Think about these things. Naomi is just like you if you've had a series of unfortunate events. Have you had just a string of things go wrong in your life? Well, Naomi did. You can enter into this story through that. Have you lost someone? Are you grieving that? Are you someone who feels hopeless? Naomi feels absolutely hopeless. And if you read the story carefully in chapter 1, she can't pray. She doesn't pray. She talks about God, but never talks to him. And along with that, she still believes in God, but she can't see him working. Now, can you relate to any of that? I think I can. I think I can enter into this story through Naomi. You could also enter into this story through Ruth. Ruth is an outsider. They're on their way to a group of people that she hasn't spent any time with other than her in-laws. And they're gone. She's an outsider. And she is unappreciated by Naomi and unnoticed. Have you felt unappreciated and unnoticed by someone that you care about, perhaps even someone that you have committed to? We ended last week by saying three things. First, God is like a chess player, and a good chess player often makes moves that the other person seeing them does not understand. But not understanding the moves that God is making does not mean he's not doing anything. That was the first thing that we ended off with. The second thing was that there are a couple of different seeds of hope within the story in chapter one. The first is that Ruth has made this commitment to Naomi. And that's going to be crucial for Naomi's well-being going forward in the story. And the last seed of hope is that they arrive back in Bethlehem at the start of the barley harvest. And now today, in today's message, we're going to see all three of these things come together. This thing about God being like a chess player, making moves that we don't understand at the time. The thing about Ruth's commitment to Naomi, and then arriving at the barley harvest. All three of these things are going to come together in our story. So I'm trusting that you have your Bible in front of you and can follow along. I'm starting at Ruth 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who once again was from the clan of Elimelech. And just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem, and he greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you," they answered him. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" And the overseer replied, "She's the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said to me, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. Whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground, and she asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you'd notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and your mother and your homeland, and you came to live with a people you didn't know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not even have standing of one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz came to her and said, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her glean among the sheaves and do not reprimand her. Even pull out some of the stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up and do not rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out what Boaz had given her that she had left over after she'd eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you do your work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is a close relative of ours. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they have finished harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go to work with the women, who work for him, because in someone else's field, you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. This is the word of the Lord. Now keep in mind, as I mentioned, Naomi and Ruth are absolutely destitute. They do not have a mustard seed, or a food bank, or a hope mission, or a potter's hands, or a Salvation Army to provide anything for them. Basically, in the ancient world, a woman's security and safety was bound up with having a man in her life who could go out and work and also provide protection. Working men equaled security in their culture and at that time. So a husband or sons, perhaps even a brother, and Naomi and Ruth have no one. Now, the extended family is supposed to be the safety net, and none of the extended family at the moment is stepping up. So the distant relatives, eventually the clan, these are the sort of concentric, the wider concentric circles that should be people who are stepping up to help. The closer the relationship is, the greater the responsibility that someone has to step up and help out those in need. And that's going to be important for later on in the story, particularly in the following chapter next week. So these destitute women have very little safety net. And so their options, really, if no one steps forward to help them, their options are going to be begging or selling themselves into slavery / prostitution. But there's one more option that they have, and it only comes at certain times of the year, and that comes the time of the harvest. Their other option is called gleaning. Now, you may remember from reading other parts of the Old Testament that God cares in particular and tells Israel to care in particular for three different types of vulnerable people. The alien, in other words, the foreigner. The fatherless, in other words, an orphan, and the widow. The alien, the fatherless, and the widow. Ruth is all three of those things. Ruth is a widow. She has no father in this country, if her father is even still alive in Moab. And she is a foreigner. So she is among the most vulnerable people in all of the land. And Naomi is much the same. Now, because God knew that these people were going to be the most vulnerable, he commands quite a number of times in Scripture to look after the alien, the fatherless, and the widow. And not only does he just tell people to do that, he also makes some provisions for them, and it is called gleaning. Gleaning is what happens while the harvest is taking place. You have to picture men out in a field working with small hand tools, and they're picking up their barley or their wheat, they're slashing it with a knife or a scythe, something like that, and then they're either throwing it in a sack or they're tying ropes together, tying a whole bunch of it together and transporting it along through the field. But anything that this harvester drops, he is not allowed to pick up. That God puts that right into the law. It is for the poor people to come along behind the harvesters and pick up for themselves, and that is called gleaning. So I love this picture because when Ruth and Naomi arrive in Bethlehem and it's harvest time and Naomi and Ruth are hungry, Ruth says to herself, "I promised I was going to stick with you and I was going to look after you, and I'm hungry and you're hungry, which means we need to eat, which means we need to work first, which means I got to go to work." So she says, "I'm going out to the field. I'm going to glean." And Naomi, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to have the motivation to go and join Ruth, but she certainly thinks that's a good idea for Ruth to do. I don't know if you have people like that in your life that say, I don't really feel like it, but that's a really good idea for you to do. Now, whether Naomi is just continually being overcome by her grief and is sunk into depression, or maybe she's just tired from the journey or doesn't feel up to it or is too old, we're not really told. But for whatever reason, Naomi stays home and Ruth says, I got to go work because we need to be provided for, and that ain't going to happen unless I go out and do something about it. Now, you got to picture this. If these people, these gleaners, are following along behind the harvesters, this has got to be backbreaking work because you're bending over all day long to pick up what's been dropped. So I got to admire Ruth for her courage and her work ethic as well. Now the story skips forward and Boaz shows up and he notices Ruth working out in the field and he says to one of his workers, who is that? And the worker informs him that she's been here all day long, she's been harvesting, and by the way, she's the one that came out with Naomi. And after Boaz finds out who she is, he goes out of his way to help her. He offers her, first of all, protection. Remember, we said she is the most vulnerable person you could possibly picture. And he knows that she is in an incredibly delicate state. She's vulnerable. He knows that she needs protection. And so he makes sure that she stays safe. He tells his other workers, don't lay a hand on her, don't touch her. In fact, take care of her. In fact, he tells his workers to drop more than they would normally have dropped, and even to let her take from what they have collected. Later on, he actually invites her to lunch. I love this about Boaz. He figures, she's poor, she didn't bring a lunch, I should invite her and share mine. I like that. Well, she asks him, why are you doing this? Like, I don't deserve this. What are you doing? And you notice his answer. His answer is, you know what? Your reputation has preceded you. I've heard about what you have done for Naomi. I've heard about the kindness that you have shown to her, and I've heard about the sacrifices that you have made by leaving everything behind so that you could make your for better or worse commitment till death do us part with Naomi. I know the sacrifices you've made. You left everything behind. Boaz is impressed. He's heard good things, and now he's seen her commitment to Naomi in action, and he's noticed that she is a hard worker. Boaz likes what he's seen, and he likes what he's heard about. Now notice that Ruth notices that Boaz is kind. She notices that he is generous, and she notices that he is going above and beyond what the law actually requires him to do. What I find really interesting about this story is that we're never actually told in the book what Ruth or Boaz look like. We don't know if she's beautiful and he's, you know, a stud, but we are shown their character. We are shown that both of them have commitment to God and that they have compassion for needy people. We've been shown that both of them show that compassion in action, and each has noticed it in the other person. Now, I don't know if the sparks are flying at this point in the story, but if they aren't flying at this point, they're going to be very, very soon as we read a little further along. So let me just pause for a moment and say, if you are single, I hope that the first thing you are looking for in a potential partner is someone with a commitment to God. And I hope that the second thing that you are looking for in that potential partner is someone with really strong character. strong character demonstrated in action, in compassion for other people, in hard work, in generosity, in living from strong, godly, biblical principles. I hope that it's character that makes the lasting impression on you and on others, because that's what we're after. Now, by the end of the day, Ruth has harvested between 30 to 40 pounds of barley. That's roughly what an ephah of barley works out to. And I read this week that that is enough to sustain Ruth and Naomi for between 5 and 7 days. Now, the barley harvest is a month long, and it's followed immediately by the wheat harvest, which means at this rate, they are going to have a little bit extra to sustain them for a short period of time. It's not quite hand to mouth day to day. It's going to sustain them slightly longer. It's a short-term solution to their predicament, but it is not going to sustain them long-term. But we shouldn't diminish this. God has given them relief, and he has given them hope, and he's provided for them for the short term. And that's not nothing. They have food. Ruth now has a working contract for the next 6 or 8 weeks. She has protection. And she has an interesting relationship now with Boaz. Now, Ruth doesn't know it at the time, but Boaz is a relative of Naomi's. And the narrator is winking at us. Remember, like I said, relatives have an obligation to help. And the narrator's going, wink, wink, Boaz is a relative. The narrator actually repeats it twice to make sure that we get it through our thick heads that Boaz is a relative. He's from the clan of Elimelech. Now, we are going to pick that up next week. But it's worth reminding ourselves of what we said last week, which is that God is a chess player. And the narrator draws our attention to some coincidences and suggests to us, perhaps, that even though these characters didn't understand it at the time, God was actually at work. Notice some of the coincidences that take place. Ruth and Naomi just happen to show up at the time that's the beginning of the barley harvest. Ruth just happens to wander into Boaz's field. The guy who's going to treat her well. The guy who is a relative of Naomi. And then Boaz just happens to arrive from the village in time to see how the work is going. And he just happens to notice Ruth, whom he just happens to have already heard about. The narrator is winking. Are these coincidences or are they something more? Is God working behind the scenes? I have 2 stories for you. About coincidences. One day when I was in school, I just happened to see a sign suggesting that those who were interested in applying to pastoral positions in a particular denomination should come to this info session. So I went. And I met the presenter. And he was the regional minister overseeing a group of churches in an area. And one of the churches that he oversees was actually a church I was planning on applying to. I had already looked at the job description and was in the process of starting to get my resume ready to submit it to this. And so when he heard about that, he said, hey, we should make an appointment. We should get together and talk a little bit more about that. I thought, oh, this is awesome timing. How cool is that? I just happened to have seen this sign, and then this guy's willing to talk to me about a job that I had already been thinking about. That's awesome. So we spent some time together getting to know one another, and he ended up recommending me for the job. He sent my name forward and told them that of all the people that were applying for this job, they should make sure that they look at my application. That was awesome. Well, I was also serving part-time in a church in my local area. And the pastor that I was working with, when I shared with him that I was applying, wanted to apply for this job, I'd met the regional minister and so on, he says to me, "Oh man, I know the pastor of that church that you're applying to. He's going to be the one hiring you. I'll write you a really good recommendation." So all of a sudden, I've got two inside tracks to this job. And I'm thinking, man, this is just perfect timing. It's going to work out great for me in graduation. I'm going to graduate in time to start this job. I mean, God is really lining this thing up. I've got two inside tracks. My family is in support of this. We won't have to move anymore. It's really close to home. God must be lining these things up. All these coincidences coming together. And you know what? After three interviews, I was the runner-up. And I didn't get the job. Sometimes coincidences are just coincidences. So don't just add them up and go, okay, we got three coincidences here. This must be from God. Sometimes they are. And sometimes they're just chance. Ecclesiastes says time and chance happen to everyone. Some things are just coincidences. Second story. Chantel and I decided that we were going to do our schooling one at a time, and so I put her through school first. And as she approached graduation, I applied and was accepted at Regent College out in Vancouver. And so she graduated Teachers College in April, and we were planning on moving to Vancouver in August of that year. And so in the meantime, after she had graduated in April, she thought, I'm going to take this course that the school is offering this summer in special education and try to make my resume look a little bit better. Hopefully stand out when I'm applying for jobs. And so she took the course that summer in special education, not because she had any particular interest in it, but solely so that she could use that to get her foot in the door. Now, one day after she had finished that course, she went into school to change her address because we had just found a place in Vancouver. We now knew where we were going to be living, and she wanted to make sure that the school knew where they could send the mail and send her certificate for graduating from this course in special education. And so she makes her way to the school, and while she's there, she bumps into a staff member who's making conversation with her. And staff member says to her, so what's happening with you? You've graduated now. Where are you going to be in the fall? What are your plans? And Chantel says, oh, well, my husband's going to Regent College. We're moving to Vancouver in August, so I'm just here to change my address and so on. And the staff member says, I have a relative out there. She is a principal. I should put you guys in touch. Well, Chantel didn't really think much of that, but she gave her email address. And lo and behold, we move out to Vancouver, and within days of moving there, Chantel gets an email from Patty, the principal, and she and her husband, Stephen, have invited us for dinner. Now, I don't know if you've ever moved across the country before, but we were in our early 20s leaving behind all of our support, and it was a really hard and heartbreaking thing to say goodbye to everyone and have them be a couple provinces away. While we're making this new life in Vancouver. And we get there and we feel so alone. So I cannot tell you how meaningful it was when we go to Patty and Steven's condo. They have us for dinner and we have great conversation, and suddenly we are known by other people. I had no idea I was going to have this profound need to be known and not feel so alone in this city. But they met that need for us. Well, as we're getting to know one another, it just so happened that Patty, the principal, needed a special education teacher. Now, BC didn't and doesn't offer the course in special education that Chantel had taken in Ontario. But that didn't stop Patty. Patty called up the people in her particular district and got them the information that they needed, and they approved Chantel as a special education teacher. And within a couple of weeks, Chantel had a full-time job. And that job sustained us for 5 years in Vancouver. While some of my friends were absolutely scraping by or incurring massive school debts, I had a sugar mama. It was awesome. And you know what? We are still friends with Patty and Stephen, because that friendship was a blessing. It was not just a means to an end. And you know what? When things got hard in Vancouver, and they got really, really hard, we often looked back on that series of events and the way that those supposed coincidences were actually God's hand making us a place available for us in Vancouver, making us, settling us, making us feel like this could be home, sustaining us with what we needed. And that series of events and the way that God worked sustained us when times got really hard, because it reminded us that if God brought us here, he would get us through this as well. Sometimes coincidences are just coincidences. And sometimes it's God working behind the scenes. And here in Ruth, it's definitely God working behind the scenes. And when Naomi finds out about these coincidences, Naomi's hope and faith is restored. And that sets the scene for what happens next in the following chapters. So our big takeaways, you know, this summer we're ending our sermons with some time for reflection. Now you're going to have that as soon as you hit the stop button or the audio plays out. This is what I want to leave you with from this chapter. First of all, character. Notice the character displayed in Boaz and in Ruth. She is a hard worker. She has put Naomi's interests ahead of her own. She's taken a risk to be out there. She's left everything behind. And Boaz notices that. And Ruth notices in Boaz some character as well, some generosity, some going above and beyond what he is required to do. And I hope that that's what we look for in other people, and I hope that that's what other people will see in us, is deep character. And the other big takeaway is from the story I just told. Sometimes it's more than chance that happens to us. Sometimes it is coincidence, and sometimes it's more. Sometimes it's actually God at work. And that might be the case for your life as well. Remember that narrative doesn't tell us the way things are. It shows us possibilities. That's it. It's not a promise for this is what God will do in your life. It holds out a possibility for you to reflect on and ask, might God be working or start working in the same way as what happened here in this story? And so that's what I leave you with. Might God be working in your life right now and lining some things up, making moves that you could not understand at the time, that you're going to be able to look back on and say, God brought me through this. It was actually him at work. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this story of how you have been at work for the benefit of a couple of little people that most of the world would have ignored. Thank you that even when people like Naomi lose hope and the ability to pray, you don't hit the pause button until they smarten up. Thank you for the people like Ruth, whom you put into our lives, who aren't in it for credit or thank you cards, but are there because they've committed to us and to do their part and to do it in a way that shows us what you are like. Thank you for the inspiration and challenge that people like Ruth and Boaz offer us through the way that they live their lives with generosity and compassion and character. I pray that we would in the same way commit to you and to allow you to shape us into the character, the people that you want to see. Shape character in us that would become a gift to others in our circles. Whether our spouses or prospective partners or our family members or friends or simply the people who wander into our fields looking for help. May they meet Jesus by seeing him in us.